This is the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials on COVID-19. It is brought to you by the Ampers Network of radio stations. Today, Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan will be joining us to answer questions that came in this week from listeners around the state. This conversation is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the current COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Heidi Holt, and I'm live from the KEXC studios on the chilly banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thank you for listening today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email COVID@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. This conversation is a collaboration of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. The Lieutenant Governor will be joining us in just a moment, but the numbers just came out in the state of Minnesota with a daily increase of 1,525 confirmed cases, 21 additional deaths in one day in the state of Minnesota. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being with us again today. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Heidi. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I wonder if we can begin our conversation looking back on this week. Wednesday was the inauguration of President Biden and Vice President Harris. I'm wondering what this means to you, especially in lieu that you now have an 8-year-old daughter.
Well, this is a great big week in our house. Absolutely. We had a birthday party and an inauguration. So while we were watching the president be sworn in, President Biden, my daughter and I ate ice cream right out of the container because that seemed to be the thing that Joe Biden would do. But also my kiddo brought me a box of Kleenex when Kamala was getting sworn in, and she just rubbed my back because mommy was crying a whole bunch. So it was an incredibly powerful day. And I just have to say, as someone who, you know, carries the weight of being the first and being the second in command, I just think it's really important that for women and women of color and Indigenous women, that we also be a soft place for the vice president to land in some way, that we can certainly hold her accountable, but also know that she's under tremendous pressure, but is bringing a voice and perspective for all of us into the room. And that is just so incredibly exciting. I can hardly stand it.
Yeah, it was really pretty amazing, too, to hear to have an acknowledgement this week of this collective grief of the United States, but of the world as well.
And we, you know, the remembrance ceremony that happened on Tuesday night, it was 20 minutes, but it was certainly what I needed to acknowledge the loss of a family member and hundreds of thousands of other folks across this country. It was really positive. It was just it was healing, I think, and important for us to do that. But before the inauguration, to acknowledge that and also to know that we have a real opportunity to move forward right now.
Before we get to our listener questions, I also want to acknowledge the passing of Laura Waterman Whitstock, an elder, an advocate, and founder of McGeezy. Not everybody may know about her, but I know you do, and I think we should learn a little bit about her.
So that was really hard news to see this week, that Laura Waterman Whitstock, who was just, you know, she's a journalist at heart, but more than anything, you know, I think she is a matriarch. She spent so much time working with young women in particular to make sure that they had a path to success and to reach their full potential. When I was just a baby organizer coming up in the community, you know, she really, really saw me. And so when I decided to run for the school board, or at least was thinking about it, running for the Minneapolis school board many, many years ago, she was one of the people who really encouraged me to do it. She encouraged me to run and become a delegate to the Democratic National Convention when I was just 24 years old, and she helped fundraise to get me there. Really, I know that my story of being seen and heard and valued and encouraged is just one of hundreds, if not thousands, of stories of young Native women and men who she just pushed to take risks and to reach our full potential. So she will be missed, and I just know her legacy is in so many people across this country and state. So I think we will continue to honor her memory by the work that we do. I certainly wouldn't be Lieutenant Governor if it wasn't for Laura Waterman Whitstock, that's for sure.
Thank you for telling us about her. Well, let's move into some of the listener questions. They have questions about that change in federal government this week with the inauguration of President Biden. And they're wondering if having a new president in office will affect the speed to which more vaccines will be ending up in arms. And what do you think of President Biden and what he will do differently from his predecessor that might affect this?
So I can tell you that even within just the last couple of days, that we have seen a tremendous difference in the approach. That has given me some hope. You know, President Biden says that he wants to get out 100 million doses in arms in 100 days. And so there are 98 days left after today. So, you know, we're ready to work with this new administration, and we're excited to see, you know, how he pulls off this plan. But to meet, you know, the reality is to meet this goal, we need to dramatically increase the amount of vaccine that is available. There's been some talk of the president using the Defense Production Act to require manufacturers to increase their production, and I believe he signed that yesterday. I think that frankly, with PPE, with vaccinations, these are all things that we've been asking the Trump administration to do. And, you know, less than 24 hours into the office, President Biden has stepped up to do that. So I certainly feel an incredible sense of relief and hope, and also that just want to remind folks that we all have to continue to be patient and really steady ourselves for the work ahead.
Let's talk more about vaccines in Minnesota. A lot of questions came in this week. You and the governor have been out visiting clinics and talking with folks who have had the vaccine. What are you hearing from them? What's that experience been like?
I have to tell you, I didn't realize how emotional it would be to see people getting vaccines, and in particular, to see elders in the urban Native community getting vaccines. It was really powerful. And I did a visit to the Native American Community Clinic, where they also were giving out boxes of traditional medicine and food to elders. And I think really taking that whole person approach, which makes a tremendous difference, and everyone who was there was excited and eager to get that vaccine. And then I also went over to North Point on the north side of Minneapolis with Bella Whitney West, who runs the clinic there. And she had a photograph with her. She was about to get vaccinated, and I got to see it happen. But she had a photograph with her of her family members from Oklahoma who did not survive the 1918 flu pandemic. And so it was a really powerful moment to just realize how much effort and work went into the fast development of this vaccine, but also that we have trusted partners like NAC and North Point and leaders from communities who are stepping up, getting their staff vaccinated. And then as more vaccine comes in, they're like, we are ready to get to work and to do it. Because these are the same partners who, when we knew that we needed to expand testing with credible messengers and trusted folks in the community, they stepped up and made it happen. And Stella said, we're going to step up and make this happen too. And so we just know that, as more vaccine comes in and we'll need to get it out, we've got incredible partners on the ground who are trusted by communities who are going to make it happen. But it was really powerful, and I am so grateful for the folks who are doing the work and for the people who actually, like, let me watch them get vaccinated, which I think is a little weird. But, you know, I was excited and, you know, did some air high fives with people as they got their vaccine. So it's pretty great.
It's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This is the statewide conversation on COVID-19 with state leaders. Our listeners sent in some questions about the rollout of the community vaccine locations and the process. There were some problems this week, probably to be expected. Our first email, what is the deal with the community signups to get a vaccine? Should people go that route or should they go through their healthcare providers?
So I think, yes, there were some hiccups, but also we are creating a brand new system, and, you know, that's to be expected. So we'll just continue to ask people to have patience, but these are also pilots. When we are piloting something, it's that we're also learning from it and figuring out how to change it and make sure that we're improving it all along the way. So we're not getting enough vaccine for a broad vaccination program right now, but we have to be ready to go from like 30 to 75 as soon as more vaccine becomes available. That's why we're standing up the nine clinics in our pilot program. So the best way to figure out what works and what doesn't and to test it in real time. The pilot also is helping us to identify best practices and procedures in areas where we need to set up clinics to meet the needs of that particular area. So the 12,000 doses that we're using in the pilot program is a very small number and isn't getting in the way of our regular vaccination program, which remains on schedule, to be clear. But they're a smart investment to build the skills and infrastructure we need when it's time to ramp up. So if you are over the age of 65 and live near one of the pilot clinics, you should try to give it a try to see if it works for you. Our goal is to find as many ways as possible to effectively administer vaccine. Many folks have been, contacted by their regular health providers when their time to get vaccinated becomes available. Others may find it more convenient to go to a local pharmacy that will be participating in that program. Those things haven't been set up yet, that is what we're expecting to do. And there may be parts of the state where there aren't local pharmacies that can handle vaccinating people and healthcare facilities that don't have the capacity. So the pilot program is going to help teach us how to set up programs in those particular areas. Heidi, the number of folks, right, that we need to vaccinate, vaccinating 5.68 million people isn't an either-or proposition. It's an all-of-the-above effort. So we're going to get there. And, like you mentioned earlier, the transition in administrations and having President Biden and Vice President Harris, I think will be helpful there. Seeing Dr. Fauci yesterday, I don't know about y'all, but that was very comforting to me. Folks are going to need to be patient. But I'd encourage people, if you're over the age of 65 and near one of those pilot locations, to sign up.
Well, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the new dashboard with that daily information. One of the things the state of Minnesota has definitely done right and has been acknowledged is the transparency in throughout this pandemic. There's now daily information about how many people have been vaccinated, how many have gotten their second doses, but I think that's where people get really confused too. When I was looking at it today, it also gives a number that's a percentage of the vaccines received that have been used. And I've heard people say that, that means that we're doing something wrong. For instance, today it says 39.3% of the vaccines received. So can you kind of explain that? Is that a low number? What does that number mean?
So, that's we want to be as transparent as possible. And again, I appreciate that you are acknowledging that. And, there's ways that I think we are going to make improvements to the dashboard as well. But really, when we talk about those percentages, it is more about, so those have been received. It may be that some folks are waiting for that it's being held for someone who has an appointment. But we're seeing, each dose, I think it's important to know that, you know, that each dose from the point when they're allocated to the state to the time that a needle goes in an arm, each dose is accounted for, and each dose has a destination. So there's, I think it's important to really reiterate that there are no, like, shelves for doses to sit on, only sites where they will be administered. So the supply chain for the vaccination itself is incredibly complex, which means there's a significant amount of time between that dose when it is announced as allocated and when it actually goes into someone's arm. So the only thing that's limiting our ability right now to vaccinate more people is the supply of vaccine. So places like, you know, the Mayo Clinic, for example, tell us that they could easily double the number of vaccinations that they're providing if they had more supply. So, you know, we are on schedule with vaccinating for impact with the limited doses available right now. But with new vaccines being approved and manufacturers who are beginning to increase their production, you know, we will be able to vaccinate more and more people. But I'm excited that folks are tuning into, you know, looking at the dashboard to get a sense. But I think sometimes when we say, you know, received, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has been administered yet.
Yeah, we can always, there's always more to learn. Patience seems to be the word to fully embrace as we're all very excited at this change and moving forward during this pandemic, but it's not going to happen overnight, that's for sure.
That's right.
So let's talk a little bit more about vaccines. We had a question this week. They want to know about if there are more vaccines in the pipeline beyond the Pfizer and Moderna ones. When will they be coming?
So that is a question that we are really excited. I don't know about you, but I'm very excited about the possibility of the one-dose vaccines. I think that will be a game changer for us. There are good reasons to be optimistic because, you know, the one dose is being developed by Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. And so we're getting ready to see when they submit their vaccinations for emergency use authorization. And I think that's supposed to happen in about a month or so. So two more companies producing the vaccine could double what we have available. So it's really exciting. And then, you know, that's when we have to be ready to kick our vaccination program into really high gear. And I think for, you know, for our community members who may be homeless or highly mobile or have other challenges of getting to a location to get vaccinated, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is, being in a single dose, is a real game changer. So I cannot wait. I will, you know, throw confetti in the air once that becomes available, because I think it'll make a tremendous difference to our state and to the country as a whole.
We had a call this week to 612-562-9895. You can call that number and leave a message. They wanted you to answer their question. This is Lori.
This is Lori from St. Paul. I'm calling about my son who was abroad in Rome for school last year and kept a journal of his daily activities and was really sick starting second week of October 2019, and he didn't really get better till January. And we realize now that the symptoms, the shortness of breath, the fever, the cough, those are like COVID symptoms. So he got tested for antibodies, and he is positive for antibodies. So now our question is, can he get in a study about how long the antibodies last? Would this be of interest to anybody that he likely had COVID so much earlier than it's been reported? And does he need a vaccine? Thanks for any information.
Lieutenant Governor?
Thanks for that question, Lori. And good on your son for keeping a journal on daily activities to have a sense of what was happening. So I wanna just preface this answer by saying I am not a doctor. I don't even play one on TV. And there are just a lot of unknowns in this case. We know that if you've had COVID, you are likely to be immune for at least 90 days, but we don't know beyond that. So I think checking in directly with your son's healthcare provider is probably the best way to go. As far as participating in a trial of some sort, I would say to check in with your doctor. You know, the current guidance that we are hearing is that if you have had COVID, you need to wait at least 60 days to be vaccinated. But we're still encouraging people to absolutely be vaccinated. That is how we're going to get to herd immunity and what is needed and necessary to stop the spread of COVID.
We had another question that came in from Northern Minnesota. They said, I've seen some people on Facebook, some friends that live in other states, bragging that they got their shot, even though I know they are not over 65 or a healthcare worker. Do all the states have different rules and protocols for who can get shots? I find this is just one more thing that makes me mad when I go on Facebook, so I am avoiding it now.
So I am no longer on Facebook personally, and you know, feels good. It's okay on the other side here. I just want folks to know. But here's the deal: the biggest difference between the COVID-19 pandemic and other epidemics, you know, has been the low profile of the Center for Disease Control. In past administrations, the CDC has led the response to epidemics. And has been coordinating with folks across the world and has been respected globally. This time, the CDC has taken a backseat to President Trump's task force, and it's fair to say that we haven't had a really strong, coordinated national response that we have typically had. I think that's changing, but that is, you know, where we were of a couple of days ago. So that's just background to the fact that, you know, each state is free to determine its own protocols for vaccinating people. The CDC has an advisory committee on vaccination procedures that makes recommendations, and Minnesota's health department has a seat on that committee. That's where the 1A, 1B, and 1C recommendations have come from most states, and most states are following those guidelines, but some are coming up with their own priorities. I do think that states need to make some adjustments to follow the federal guidance, but there should be a coordinated plan that all states can be able to follow. We have to start vaccinating for impact, and that's what we're doing here in Minnesota, starting with the folks who are most vulnerable and protecting those who are on the front line protecting us. I also remind people, just generally, when it comes to, you know, to vaccination or to healthcare or to any other thing, there may be underlying conditions that someone has that you just don't know about. And so, you know, trying not to to determine, you know, through your computer screen what people might be struggling with health-wise is always, you know, sort of a good practice to maintain. You know, I am really eager to get to the point where when it is your time, you can easily and, you know, quickly access those vaccines.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, you have the choice. You can get off social media. You can also hide people or unfriend people. You don't have to give, you know, there's enough going on in life. I don't think you need to be more angry by looking at social media.
That's true. Yep.
Well, we had another question about education. Please help me understand how things will change when educators finally get vaccinated. Are the kids going to be back in school full time then? And how long until this all goes down?
So today or yesterday, I brought my kiddo to school. She is now in full day classes, and she was excited to go back. It felt for me like another first day. It was like our first third day right, of school. And I felt a little bit like when I dropped her off at kindergarten, wanting to make sure that, you know, that she's okay. You know, I also feel confident that the measures and procedures that her school is implementing that are in place means that that she will be safe. And so I just wanted to make sure that folks know I would not send my kid to school unless I was sure that the plan that her school and district have laid out and other folks across the state, you know, if it's safe. So, you know, and getting kids back in the classroom has been a real priority for us. So we've certainly seen the public health risks of COVID, but there also are public health risks of having our kids out of school for a tremendously long period of time. So it's important for their, you know, education and overall well-being. And for a lot of kids, you know, that school is the place where they get regular meals, where their social and emotional well-being is also supported and taken care of. So that's why, you know, distance learning has been a challenge. It's been necessary, but it's no substitute for having kids in the classroom. So, you know, we're on schedule to finish up the first group of vaccines for healthcare workers and people in long-term care facilities. Next week, in fact, we'll be laying out our plans to move on to the next group, which will include teachers and other essential workers. But even after all the teachers are vaccinated, it will take more time before we can vaccinate all students. That means that there's still a risk of transmission within school buildings that could spread to other vulnerable people. If we have a surge the way that we did in the fall, it may again become difficult for schools to operate simply because their staffing may become insufficient and they might have a large number of quarantines in a school because there are more exposures. But, you know, I think it's fair to say that the school year will not see a complete return to the classroom for all students, but there's a good good reason to be hopeful for the fall. I also just want to name vaccines are for individuals who are 16 years of age and older at this point. So they're still testing the proper dosage for children, which is why when your time becomes available to get vaccinated, and I feel like I sound like a broken record, Heidi. I'm going to tell you the same about flu shot, right? That we have the responsibility to get that vaccine for the folks who can't be vaccinated yet.
Yeah. Well, I want to sneak in another question because I hear this a lot from people that they're not worried about getting COVID. They think it's, you know, maybe a little bit worse than the flu. We had someone who wrote in who has been hearing news about how COVID lung may be worse than smoker's lung. And I wonder if you could address that sort of generally of what we know now about the effects of it.
For sure. So I also just want to say that, we are months and months and months into COVID-19, and we recently passed the number of losing over 415,000 people. So it is serious. This, again, is a really technical question. I'm not a doctor, but here's how I understand the issue, which is from like a 30,000 foot or maybe higher view. COVID exposure to toxic COVID and exposures to toxic substances like cigarette smoke can cause damage to the lungs. There are points in the development of the disease where the damage from COVID can look like smoker's lung. COVID is serious. It can cause severe pneumonia. And in some cases, it can lead to what your caller said, to prolonged lung issues. We know that the scarring and long-term damage caused by long-term exposure to toxins in cigarette smoke is non-reversible. COVID creates what they're calling an acute inflammatory response. So with some diseases, this inflammation can return to normal, but we don't know if this is going to be the case for COVID quite yet and what the impacts are to the lungs in the long term. So just remembering that this disease is still only about a year old. So there's a lot to continue to learn about it. And this is why people have to keep taking it seriously.
Patience. I'm hearing that again from you.
Yes, that's right.
It's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Thank you again for your time. We appreciate it and stay safe.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Get off Facebook and go outside, everybody.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state of Minnesota in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, as well as the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation at kexe.org, or if you have a question to send in, email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.